Good morning again. So that was, I love that. I just love getting a chance to show you what I get to see all the time. Students whose hearts are on fire for Jesus. This morning, I want to encourage you. I want to give you hope. I want to focus in on what is happening in the youth and where I see this church headed. But I also want to encourage you in the face of what might seem like worrying times, how we can still hold the hope. And so just a little bit about me first. I have a little photo. You already met Rachel and Ziggy. You saw her feet. That's her face. So that's Ziggy. She is about 8 months old now. And the moment she was born, I feel like a part of my heart unlocked that I didn't know was there, that like I loved her more than anything else in this world. And I was telling this story to the middle schoolers. I was trying to fire them up and be like, did you know how much God loves you? Like, he says that he is compassionate, like a father who loves their young child. And I was like, guys, I love Ziggy more than anything in this world. And then I walked off stage later after the worship night, and Uzziah, Brandon's son, came up to me. He said, Mark, I just want to tell you, you're an idol worshiper. And I was like, whoa. He's like, you should put nothing before God in your heart. And I was like, okay. So, just to clarify, I love Ziggy second most in this world. Tied with Rachel. I'm just gonna move on. With that love, I've noticed in my heart something else has awakened, and it's probably because she's the first child, but I have been worrying like crazy just about her, about everything around her. Like, I've noticed that at our house, there are so many things that could kill a baby that I didn't realize before. Corners, you know, like even the baseboard is like sharp. Like, who gets injured by baseboard? She does. So whenever I'm watching her, I build like a cushion fort in the living room, and she gets to live within those boundaries. While I was working on this sermon, I heard something behind me, like the sound of chewing, and I turn around and she's in her little walker, but the house plant was hanging down and she's just like hands down chewing on it. So I had to Google, is this plant poisonous? You know, and now I'm worried. It turns out it had good health benefits. It was great. But stuff like that. She drools like crazy. I'm worried that I had to Google, can a baby drown in its own drool? You know, like things I never thought I had to worry about. Now I see like in my heart are causing worry. And that being the case, I also think about the future. I think about where we are headed as a culture. What kind of world will my child grow up in? I've talked to a lot of people my age who refuse to have kids because they say, I don't want to bring a kid into this chaos, this crazy world. I think about it with my job as the high school and middle school pastor here. Like, what type of world will it be when these students are stepping out into the world, when they're off in college, past college? I was doing some studying for this, and I noted a worrying trend, now that I'm such a worrier. A trend I noticed as I was looking at all the studies of the church, of where the future generations are headed, pretty much it's all agreed that the younger the generation is, Gen Z, millennial, whatever the other ones are, every generation, there's a percentage of people who are leaving the church in larger numbers. This specific survey showed that 1/3 of Gen Z considers themselves non-religious, not affiliated with the church. And really what we're seeing is millions of people every year who once considered themselves Christians, then walking away from the faith. And it seems the younger the generation, the more rapidly it's happening. So this is kind of a concerning thing, obviously, if you care about the church, you care about the world, and we know the church is important for the world to stay in a healthy place. So one of my favorite authors is John Mark Comer. I don't know if you've read anything by him, but I would highly recommend it. I'm sure Matt and Shelby Heisler are here, but they make fun of me because almost every sermon I reference John Mark Comer in some way, shape, or form, so here it is. He has a book called Live No Lies, in which he's speaking into this, and he gives three ways that culture has shifted, which he says feeds into maybe why we're seeing this change. The first is that Christianity went from a cognitive majority to a cognitive minority, meaning that it used to be that most people held to these same values, held to this same faith, and now more and more in America, we're seeing less and less people claiming Christianity as their faith, as what they look to for truth. A recent survey showed that even though about 65% of people would consider themselves a Christian, when you really get down to it and ask questions, they put it this way: a recent in-depth analysis by Barna Group, which is a Christian think tank, put the number of young adults who are resilient disciples at only 10%. So people who are truly pursuing their faith, living out a life for Jesus, about 10%. And so that's a massive minority in what used to be a Christian nation. And so as majority fades to minority in thought, what we see is that people tend to stop. Basically, people like to believe what other people think, and if Christianity has now begun to fade to more of a minority idea, something that not many people think, then that's why the younger generations are starting to shift away from it. So that's one reason he lists. The second one is our place in culture. So Christianity is shifting from a place of honor to a place of shame. In other words, Christian leaders who founded this nation did a lot of great things. Many of our early universities were founded as Christian universities, and they were pastoral training schools. And now those academic areas have shifted so far the other way. To hold to any Christian values in those spaces, you become the fool. So it went from a thing of honor, the scientists who early on were coming up with these great discoveries, many of them were Christian thinkers, but now to be a Christian in the science realm, you're at odds with the majority. And so you've kind of gone from this place of honor to shame. And John Mark Comer puts it this way when he's talking about it as well. He says, the church is seen as part of the problem, not the solution. What's more, with the radical moral reversal around human sexuality, gender, and the life of the unborn, we now have the moral low ground in many people's eyes. Jesus' vision of human sexuality is perceived as immoral by a large swath of the population. So, there's been this reversal. There's been this idea that those who follow and want to live the way Jesus did, those people are now the moral low ground, which then turns to this point three. And he says, our culture has gone from widespread tolerance to a position of hostility towards Christians. So in other words, Christians have become dangerous. We went from this place where we were the norm, where most people held to Christian values, believed it. Then culture shifted to Christians are no longer the norm, they're just weirdos. They're just like the Jesus freaks. They're the people holding to certain standards that no one else is, but they're weird, but we still tolerate them. And now what we're seeing, this is what maybe is concerning to many, is that the culture has shifted again, that the Christian is no longer just the weirdo, but they are dangerous. They are the problem. They are a threat to secularism's alternate vision of what human flourishing is. And so they put it this way. We are living in what is called a digital Babylon. The experience of knowing that one is an alien and perhaps even in a hostile environment when the dominant values run counter to one's own. So to be a Christian now in America is to live in this digital Babylon, this space where your beliefs are counter to culture. And that can be a tough thing. That can be a scary thing for a lot of young believers or young people who call themselves a Christian, and that can be enough to keep them from wanting to press in. And so this morning, that's what I want to look at. I just want to ask this question: when the future seems dark, when it feels like the world is turning against Christianity, everything we hold and value, the way of being a Christian, when that is kind of under attack in this digital Babylon, when we're living as the cognitive minority, it seems like the darkness is winning. Where do we look to for hope? How do we find hope in this? What do we do when it feels like the darkness is overpowering? So that's what I want to talk about this morning. I don't intend, even though I started with this darkness thought, I want this morning to be a moment of hope for you. I want this to be a moment of encouragement, because the reality is this is what Christianity has faced since its very beginning. The world has always been dark, and that's why I think when we're answering what do we do when the world seems dark, when it seems like darkness is winning, let's turn to John 8:12. The verse says this, and it's simple. You've probably heard it before, but I think it's good to just remind ourselves of the simple truth sometimes. Jesus spoke to the people once more, and he said, "I am the light of the world. I am the light. If you follow me, you won't have to walk in darkness, because you will have the light that leads to life." I think there's something really powerful here, because when things are getting dark, when we feel like people are attacking our faith, when we feel like we are being pushed out of spaces and silenced, one of our reactions can be to rage against the darkness. Or in other sense, we can get so angry, we can hate the people who are doing this. We can hate the people who are standing for what's wrong. And all of our focus and attention can shift towards fighting the darkness, in a sense. We can shift our attention to trying to win this culture war by ways of argumentation or evidence and just getting down in the dirt with these fights. I've seen it a lot on social media, just the comment back and forth. I've seen it in politics. But what I've noticed is that when we focus on the darkness, something happens to us. There's symptoms that basically the fruit of what you're focusing on, your focus leads to the fruits that are produced in your life. So if you're focused on the darkness, if you're focused on these scary, anxiety-inducing things of where the future is headed, the symptoms are that you begin to live in rage. You begin to live in anger. You become bitter towards people. You become hateful because you're so focused on the darkness and the fear. But what my encouragement to you would be is that as the world seems to be getting darker, what we need to do as the church is that we need to focus on the light. We need to focus on who Jesus is. We need to focus on what it means. As he says right here, those who follow me will never walk in darkness. So we have to ask the question, what does it mean to be a church fully devoted to loving Jesus and living like him in this world, or following him? What does it mean to be a follower of him? A good analogy, there's this devotional called Experiencing God, and I got it for all my leaders. I've been reading through it, but he did one study on light versus darkness. And what I really liked about him is he says, when you walk into a room full of darkness, it doesn't make sense to be angry at the dark for being dark. You don't rage at the darkness. Instead, you seek to turn on the light, because light in its very nature expels darkness. As Christians, we can get so focused in on trying to fight off and get rid of the darkness that we can forget that the thing Jesus has called us to is to be a light in this world, right? He says, you are a city set on a hill. You are to be different. Your focus, in other words, I want you to focus on following me. Be like me in this world. I want you, John Mark Comer has a book that just came out called Practicing the Way. And what I love about it is it's very simple. He simplified what it means to be a follower of Jesus here in modern day. And he put it as these three things. He says, be with Jesus, become like Jesus, and do what Jesus did. The first one, be with Jesus, I think is so important for us to understand. If we want to be a light in this world, we have to know the God we serve. We have to know Jesus. I told this story in first service, and it went over well, so I'll tell it again. When I met my wife, it was not like a Hollywood movie where it was love at first sight. She was beautiful, but it wasn't this like, oh, you are the one my heart has always longed for. We will ever be together always. No, when we met, it was like there was attraction, but as we began to date, as I began to sit with her and to get to know her life, to get to know her dreams, her goals, the person she was, her character, as I sat with her time after time, date after date, I fell madly in love with her because of who she is. I fell in love with her character because I got to know her and I spent time with her. With Jesus, sometimes there's this lack of love as followers of Jesus that we have. There's this lack of passion. And I honestly think it's because we don't spend time with Jesus. If we spend time with him, if we get to know his character, if we spend time in prayer, journaling out our thoughts to him, if we spend time reading about who he is in the scriptures, getting to know our God, there is nothing that can happen except falling in love with him because that's how great of a God he is. And so as a church in this modern day, being with Jesus is so important because that's how we become like him. That's how we begin to think like him. As we spend time with him, we begin to see people the way he sees people. We don't begin to call other people our enemy because they're doing deeds of darkness. Instead, just like Jesus, we see people as being caught in slavery to their sin. We see people as they are people Jesus loves who are blinded by the darkness. The thing they need most is his light. It helps us step out of this anger and bitterness towards others into a place of compassion, a place of wanting what's best for them and wanting, even if they're angry, even if they're attacking, just like Jesus, we say, Father, they don't know what they're doing. Help me to love them. And so as we begin to let Jesus shape our heart, we see people differently, and that leads to us doing as Jesus did. So to be a modern-day follower of Jesus, it's that simple. It's being with him, allowing that time to make you become like him so that you eventually do as he did. You treat people like he did. And that's I kind of think of this. I'm a big fan of the moon. It's a weird sentence to just randomly insert. I love a good full moon. Love when it's a little orange. I'm no geologist, but what I've been told is the moon is made out of dust. I'm 50% on that. I could still go for the cheese theory, but good evidence is probably dust. It's a big ball of dust floating up in the sky. But it's cool because that big ball of dust reflects light into the night. If you've ever been outside when there's a full moon, it's like should be utter darkness, but yet there's this light that's lighting up the path. There's this light, like you can still see things. It's awesome. I love the moon. It's a beautiful thing. But the moon by itself would be nothing. The moon gets its glory because it reflects the light of the sun to the earth, right? The moon reflects the light of the sun into the darkness. That is who God created us to be. We are balls of dust. In Psalm 103, it says, he knows how we're formed. He knows we are just dust. So in us, there's no glory in and of ourselves. But how we can change this world, what we're called to do, we're called to reflect the light of the sun into the darkness, right? Jesus, he is the one that we want to allow to shape our hearts because he's the only one that can change people's hearts. The problem with this world is the problem of the heart. It's sin. The only heart surgeon I know that can deal with sin and to give a new heart, that's Jesus. That's what this world needs. It needs to see Jesus through the people of Jesus. Which brings us to the next thing that if I'm giving you encouragement, the future looks dark. How do we find hope? Jesus has given us himself, the Holy Spirit, but he's also given us one another. If you look around the room, these people here today, Jesus has given us each other to be there for one another. Hebrews 10:23 puts it this way. He says, "Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful." So we're holding on to our hope in Jesus. He's faithful. And let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. Be there for one another. Press into the relationships that are here, because God designed us to, like, I think it's incredible how God works through people. God could have done all this on his own. He doesn't need to partner with us to work in this world, but God has chosen to do that, which means that the people sitting here, we need one another. God could use you, Dave, to work in my life or at the I Can ministry. Like, God is using you to be a light to those people, and those people are being a light to you. And we need one another in order to experience what maybe God even has for us this morning. Like, I guess my encouragement to you in this is don't walk into this place and leave without getting to know somebody. The church needs to be a place where we are known and where we know others. Community is so important. God created us for that. No man is an island. We need one another. God's Spirit works when we're together. He works in the lives of others through each other. We need each other. And you have to, if you're new, it might be scary, but just starting a conversation. If you see someone who's new, start a conversation, get to know one another. I referenced Tony Marucci in the first service. Tony is, I don't know how old he is, but he could be my dad type of thing. But I've gotten to know Tony through men's prayer and coffee. We show up on Tuesdays, it's early, but just a couple of guys, we pray together. We share what's going on in our lives, and then the guy sitting next to you prays into your situation. He knows you. He cares for you. He prays to God on your behalf. And there's something that happens in the human heart when people come together and lift each other up in prayer. And that's what I tell you, we need it. We need one another, and we need Jesus at the center. So a community of people on fire for Jesus, letting that love for him flow into our love for one another. That's the design for the church, because then from there, it flows out into San Clemente, into Orange County, into California. I don't know how, you know, what the actual bucket sizes are there, but it's like it goes from here. This is like ground zero where we love one another and let that flow out into the world. So how do we prepare for the darkness? We hold on to the light, and we hold on to one another and encourage each other in that. And that's my message of hope for you this morning. It is in this thought that we might, like the statistics I read earlier, we might feel like, oh, the young people are walking away. They're leaving the faith in higher numbers. And that might be true, but I was talking with one of my leaders, Megan. And Megan is a philosophy major at Talbot. She's very wise. And so I love talking to her because I am otherwise. And she was telling me, she's like, "Mark, this community has been such a blessing for me to be a part of." So she's a high school leader. She's an adult helping out, volunteering. And she's like, "Every time I come into this place, these kids are a blessing to me. They like fill me up. They speak into my life." And I was like, it is such a cool thing. And she said, You know what people have studied, what tends to happen? When Christianity no longer becomes the majority, the thing that's cool to be, the thing that's normal to be, then the majority of people will walk away from it. But for the minority of people who stay, who hold on to the faith when it's not the cool thing to do, or when it's even in the face of hostility, those who hold on, that's a real faith. She said, I think America is entering into a time where we'll know the true followers because the ones who hold on will have this genuine desire to know God, this passion that's infectious. And that's what I feel like I get to see in the high school ministry right now, in the middle school as well, for the last couple months. We had like 23, 25 baptisms after Hume Lake last year. And what was really cool is the community that came out to support the 23 kids. We had about 150 people on the beach celebrating together. We did some worship, but like this, it just felt like you can see there's something happening here. We did a surf and snow day, which is like a high school dream of mine to go to the mountains and the beach in the same day. And so I woke up at like 4:30. We drove up to the mountains, snowboarded, came back to the beach, and we did a bonfire and surfing. And the night was supposed to end at 7 o'clock, but we had about 30 students around a bonfire, and they kept asking Gavin to do more worship songs, and it went until 9:30. So like 2.5 hours just sitting there worshiping. And people were walking by joining in. And this guy from Norway, Antonio, I think, that doesn't sound right. some Norwegian name, he came over, Gregor, he was at the bonfire next to us, and he walked up and he was like, I can't tell you what it means to my heart to see young people worshiping the Lord out in the open and so vibrantly. And it was just like one of those things. It was unplanned, but just out of their love for the community aspect and out of their love for Jesus, like this, just, I don't know, it was just so cool. So that was one of my favorite days, not because of anything I had planned for the day, but for the part of the day that happened after, where it was just genuine worship. And every year we get the chance to go down to Mexico as well, and we get to speak into the lives of some people who really need it. It's these poor areas of Ensenada that we come in with students. It's always crazy every year to just take students out of their norm and to see the poverty that's not that far, like 70 miles away. But every year it's so cool to just see not only the sweat and blood that the students put into, and I do mean blood, especially Gavin stepped on a nail last year. That was pretty bad. But not just the effort put in, but the genuine, like when we have those moments of Bible study together and the questions and the care for the people as students pour into the children that are over there, just help, like we do, I don't know, whatever it may be, Bible stories, just playing with them. All of the things, it's just like, I have probably one of the coolest jobs in the world because I get to witness what God is doing in the younger generation. So my message to you this morning is to not lose hope. I think God is doing something amazing, not only in the youth in general, but here at this church. And we do have just a little video of the Mexico trip because it is coming up. So I'll show that to you, and then Pastor Matt will close out our morning.